Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we are shifting gears here to talk about Ebola, because I think all of us are worrying about this Ebola hemorrhagic disease and what it's doing and why it's there, where it comes from. People are being brought to the United States who are infected because they have to be treated, and what all this means, both in terms of public health and our environment and more. We are a pleasure to have back with us Mira Woods, who is now the Director for Social Impact Programs at ThoughtWorks, a software consulting firm dedicated to economic and social justice. And as she's also still an Associate Fellow of the Institute of Policy Studies. Mira, welcome back. Good to have you with us. And congratulations
on your, to be with you.
And congratulations on your new work.
Thank you.
Dr. John.
Happy to be at a progressive firm that's making change in the world through technology and innovation.
It's a great firm. They're lucky to have you. Dr. John Eldridge is with us, Chief Scientific Officer for Perfectus Biosciences. Dr. Eldridge, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Lawrence Brown's in the studio, political activist and public health consultant, assistant professor of public health in the School of Community Health and Policy here at Morgan State University.
Morning.
And all of you at 410-319-8888 to join us. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook page, The Mark Steiner Show, 410-319-8888, talk@steinershow.org. And Amira, in some ways, this Ebola outbreak, this epidemic spreading through parts of West Africa, before we get to the root of it, I mean, I think there's a juxtaposition here, especially with the Conference of African Leaders being held in Washington at the same time by President Barack Obama, and what you think all that has to say to it.
Without a doubt, Mark, I think you are right to draw the connections. I think what we see is a summit taking place in Washington at a time when a crisis is erupting in West Africa, with implications really for the broader region and the world. And that crisis is a result, quite frankly, of the policies that came from Washington, what many call the Washington Consensus, neoliberal policies that essentially cut out government spending in essential services like health. So when we look today and see a healthcare system in shambles the way it is now in Liberia, in Guinea, in Sierra Leone, the countries that are most dramatically impacted by this crisis, the healthcare infrastructure has come to a collapse because of a set of policies put in place here in Washington, D.C., both by bilateral policies from the United States, by multilateral policies from the international financial institutions here in Washington, D.C. So, you know, when we see a summit taking place, well, today is President Obama's birthday. We wish him happy birthday, and there are 50 African heads of state wishing him happy birthday. But beyond that, we've got to understand now, in the 21st century, we cannot have the status quo continuing where the majority of people on the planet are actually pushed further and further off the brink without access to affordable health care, without access to affordable, whether it's education, housing, those essential building blocks of healthy society are being decimated while, you know, folks are being feted at the White House.
So, and Dr. John Eldridge, I'm glad you're with us here. I mean, I think one of the issues here is how you even begin to treat Ebola. It's this kind of hemorrhagic disease, and we'll get to the notion of zoonotic diseases that this is one of, perhaps, and difficulty in treating it, but also why there's been such difficulty in getting a vaccine to the market.
Well, the difficulty in getting a vaccine to the market is that you know, up to this point, there's been very limited funding to take things forward, and you know, unfortunately, you know, the threat has not been perceived as one from an epidemic standpoint as much as it's been perceived as one from a biodefense standpoint. So the funding to take vaccines, you know, forward into the clinic has really been a lower priority. With the obvious outbreak and you know, the recognition that this is something which is not necessarily going to be isolated to Africa, and the possibility that it can be spread worldwide quite rapidly, I think, has elevated the perception, obviously has increased the recognition of the need to take the most promising vaccine concepts forward into clinical evaluation to get them evaluated.
Yeah, I think one of the issues here when it comes to vaccines, and Lawrence, I'll go to you, and then back to John Elders before we move into what you think are some of the structural reasons these outbreaks are taking place throughout West Africa at the moment, that often, unless there's a huge profit to be made, vaccines are not made. And that this one, in particular, it is kind of the question of global terrorism and the ecological disasters that the United States government and the Army may fund is where the money may come from.
Mm-hmm.
And may approach this like they do yellow fever when there's an outbreak. Hundreds of thousands of vaccines are made available on an emergency basis. But it's a real there's a real dilemma here.
Well, the key thing to, I think, realize about Ebola, first of all, is that there have been, as of July 29th, 729 people killed in West Africa by the virus, and 1,323 have been infected, according to the World Health Organization. So, tremendous loss of life has occurred so far. The problem that Ebola presents is, A, there is no vaccine. B, there is no cure. And C, it's a disease that attacks multiple organs and body systems at the same time, or it can do that at the same time. Unlike the flu, which targets the respiratory system, Ebola can target your heart, your liver, your kidneys. It can go all over the place. And so that's what makes it so hard to treat and simultaneously hard to diagnose, even, because you could have a fever, you could have, bleeding, internal bleeding, sweating, a lot of symptoms that are also common with other diseases. So the problem is really at the ground level is the surveillance that should be taking place and needs to ramp up. And certainly we can trace whether or not these issues are occurring the way they should because of structural issues and geopolitical issues. But I think on the flip side, we should also understand that Africa is a huge continent. It can fit China, India, and the United States, and probably all of Europe at the same time. So we're talking about a huge geographic area. This is only affecting three countries. And Africa, when we think about the popular image of Africa, Africa is actually on the upswing, on the uprise, and this disease doesn't define Africa. So I think we have to think about the cultural implications of what we say and the way we think about this disease and even the way we consider the humanity of the African people.
That's a very interesting point. Amir, I'd like you to follow up on that. I mean, because this is I think that's very true. And I think that before we get into the other issues that people are worried about and also the issues of what might be underneath of Ebola, what are your responses to what Lawrence just said?
I applaud him for saying, I think what we've seen is a kind of almost racist reaction to this virus in a sense of, keep it over there without recognizing that there are systems and structural conditions that have created a situation where this crisis is really putting so many lives at risk. And so I think it is important to not stigmatize either those that contract the disease or certainly not entire countries or continents because of this. But I do think that this is an opportunity to also educate people of the importance of reinforcing, public health across the board. That when we put in place policies that strip away the opportunities for people to have just access to basic health care, it has repercussions now and into the future. And so I think it's really a teachable moment for that. It is also, I think an important moment to remind people that, yes, these, if you think only of the three countries most desperately impacted, Liberia, Guinea, Sierra Leone, those countries are rich in resources, from diamonds to iron ore to rubber, and now to oil. And yet the way the economies have been structured to essentially allow for resources to be taken out of the country, multinational corporations doing their thing, without access to taxation that's needed for the governments to actually put in place infrastructure to protect their people and to provide essential services for their citizens. And so I think it's an important moment that underlying causes of this crisis, and also what is needed to prevent further crises down the road. And I hope we have a chance to get to that as well.
So on the way to the phone here, and I want to raise some issues about where this virus come from and why it's becoming so prevalent, the dangers maybe to the world, not because of world travel. But Dr. Eldridge, talk a bit about the science of this, though, and what can be a response when 79%, at least at this point, sometimes in the last outbreaks, higher numbers of people die from this, and we know that it has to be some bodily fluid system that passes it, not just passed by breathing and coughing. But talk a bit about the medical difficulties here and putting your arms around this.
Well, you've touched on the medical difficulties of treating people once they're infected. Just containment of the bodily fluids during this disease process is extremely difficult. It requires, doctors to be suited. It's difficult to deliver care. The key in this case will be the development of preventatives, vaccines, and other approaches which will allow you to respond rapidly when an outbreak begins. And the normal strategy would be to use a preventative vaccine and what would be called a ring strategy to surround an area where there was an outbreak and vaccinate all the people that could possibly be exposed. And basically prevent the spread from out of these hot spots and allow it to burn out. Now, there are other approaches which could be applied post-exposure and post-infection, but they're difficult to deliver. They require intravenous infusions. They're expensive. So from a public health standpoint, the development of a vaccine is of the highest priority because it allows you to stockpile it, to have it available for a disease such as Ebola, which breaks out sporadically, which makes mass campaigns for vaccination and prevention difficult to manage. But the identification of a vaccine that will be able to be practically used in the field to provide solid protection with a limited number of doses and at a very reasonable cost per dose is certainly an achievable goal, and that's what needs to be put into place as rapidly as possible to deal with what is currently happening, and to make sure that in the future you will be in a position not to panic and have to develop things after the fact, but to have it available.
Let me have a quick call here on our way to break at 410-319-8888 and 8888. And Isaac in Randallstown, you're on the air.
Yes, Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Isaac.
I know you are at WJHU when you were running it, so you do a good job.
Thank you
so much for bringing this Ebola issue. I'm from Liberia, the western part of where this Ebola is coming from. My organization has been sending medical supplies to Liberia. One of the key ingredients that caused this to spread at the beginning, the three governments were afraid of making it public. So by the time they really reacted to it, it has spread all over the three countries and kill a lot of folks. The issue right now is for us to ask all the peace-loving Americans to help us with medical supply, financial help, because the restrictions they have installed in these three countries is causing a lot of problems and suffering. People can't go out. They cannot get food. The prices of food, rice, which is their staple food, is gone up. There are medical helpers who are helping. When somebody dies, they end up burying it, dumping them on the street. So, Mark, you and all the doctors, the two folks who are on the line, and everybody listening to this, to please help. Go to your church, do a contribution. We need help. It's a very big disaster for all three countries.
All right. Isaac, thank you so much for joining that part of the conversation. Good to hear from you again. It's been a while. And that is true. And we'll be putting on our website places that you can go to contribute and help in this crisis. We're going to take a very brief break, hit two quick more areas on Ebola before we have to move on to our next subject. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We may not have a sense to pay the rent, but we're going to make it. I know we will. We may have to eat beans every day, but we're going to make it. It's hard to find, and we have to stand in the welfare line. I've got your love, and you know you've got mine. But we're going to make it. I know we will. But we're going to make it, I know we will. We may have to fight hardship.
That's Little Milton, We're Gonna Make It. He was one of the great R&B electric blues singer-songwriter guitarists. He died on this day in 2005 when he was only 74 years old, and he is famous for making the song We're Gonna Make It and Grits and Groceries. So Little Milton passed away on this day in 2005. And we continue our conversation on Ebola here with our guests here in studio and by phone. We'll just go back to our conversation right away. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And let me just, and we're here with Emira Woods, who is director of social impact programs at ThoughtWorks, a software consulting firm dedicated to economic and social justice, still a associate fellow at Institute for Policy Studies, Dr. John Eldridge, chief scientific officer of Perspective Biosciences, and Dr. Lawrence Brown, assistant professor of public health here at the School of Community Health and Policy at Morgan State University. 410-319-8888. Write to us here talk at steinershow.org. But going back to a couple of things here, one is that this is what's known as, I'll let the two of you, Dr. Eldridge and Dr. Brown here, talk a bit about this. A, this is what's called a zoonotic disease, and talk about what that means for people to understand it, and B, the dangers of it reaching the United States or any other place on the planet, given international travel. Dr. Eldridge, you want to start first?
Okay, I'm sorry. Would you repeat the first question?
Yeah, the notion of what a zoonotic disease is.
Okay, a zoonotic disease is a disease that, you know, exists within a host population within a particular geographic region, and then is generally then transmitted to the human population. So this would be what would commonly be characterized as a disease which is held in an animal reservoir that sporadically makes its way into the human population.
So what is the danger here, very quickly? We have to take a break in a couple of minutes. With this being brought to the United States or any other country in the continent of Africa or throughout the world because of the way we travel?
That's the major difficulty. Is the fact that, you know, the outbreaks are sporadic, difficult to predict. As you can see, they can spread rather rapidly, either because people, you know, don't want to admit that it's happening. This is the first time that the outbreaks in Africa have been so close to large urban populations and with access to air travel. Most of the outbreaks in the past have been in more isolated regions, and the fact that the virus is so lethal leads to its burning out. This is the one that's the wake-up call, which tells you that an infected person could unknowingly climb on an airplane and land in any other part of the world, essentially, before symptoms arose. And there have been several, scares recently with individuals traveling out of West Africa and landing in very highly densely populated areas, and then showing symptoms which at least led you to fear that they may have been infected and entered a very large densely populated urban area.
And so let me just go very quickly to Emira and to Lawrence, because we do have to end the segment here. But one of the things that's not talked about often is what allows these kind of outbreaks to be unleashed on the human beings. And some of it, Emira, does have to do with the contradictions. When Lawrence talked about earlier about much of Africa and West Africa booming, that's part of the problem, that It's the mining. It's the destruction of forests for timber that forces people to go into the bush for food, which they wouldn't ordinarily do, and eat what's called bushmeat, which is some of these animals, whether it's bats or gorillas and chimps, that may be carrying this disease. That, in fact, it's just the way we are approaching the world, unleashing these diseases we've never had before.
Well, I think the reality is that you have countries rich in resources, but yet also with really growing inequality. And, you know, it is that you know, 99%, using the language of Occupy, the 99%, the majority of people are not able to access even the most essential services. And I think unless we address that, it will be really difficult for us as a human family to be able to actually have a more peaceful and prosperous world. And I do think that there's some opportunities. If you think about all the countries impacted, whether urban areas or rural areas, all are saturated with cell phones. I think we have to begin to think about using technology in ways that help to build an infrastructure that creates a support system from the ground up, from the bottom up, ensuring that everyone has access to information on their health needs, on their education opportunities. It runs the gamut. But I think, you know, in addition to these challenges, there are also opportunities, and we should use these crisis moments to build opportunities for change into the future that help to sustain lives for the majority of people on this planet.
Well, very quickly, as you have to break.
Yes, Ebola will be contained. That's the good news. It's not an airborne disease. It's spread through contact with bodily fluid. So we don't want people having an over anxiety around the issue. And the CDC is sending 50 staff members to help control the disease. Help is on the way.
And we'll close with the quote by Dr. Jonathan Epstein, who is a veterinary epidemiologist and Ebola expert, who says, "I think there are lots of instances of human activities driving spillovers and outbreaks. Why we say that some of these things are cultural traditions, these activities are relatively newer but intensifying, like going after bushmeat and deforestation and incursion into forest, whether it's through hunting or just alteration of landscape, is causing people and wildlife to have more interaction. Part of the problem." We'll come back to all this. I want to thank our three guests, Amira Woods, Dr. John Eldridge, Dr. Lawrence Brown. Thank you so much.
Thank you.